Thanks for listening to Three Empty Pints this week. If you haven't subscribed to us on your favorite podcasting app, please do. And you can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, Acast, Google Play, Auto Radio, and Player FM. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Three Empty Pints. And if you would like to email us your questions, witticisms, and general disgruntlement, threeemptypints@mail.com. And also, if you'd like to donate, send us money, support us, please do. Click on the tip jar link in this week's episode, or visit our website as well.
Previously on Three Empty Pints, the guys get together and read Ted Kaczynski's manifesto. Technology's fucked up. Let's find out in the second half if all three can agree that the libtard is wrong, the conservative guy is wrong. Is there a conservative? I don't think so. The anarchist and the guy who just doesn't care. Be enlightened, be informed, and read along if you printed it.
The next section, which is
disruption of the power process in modern society.
Yes. Did anyone like this section?
No.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of weird. I mean, what he talks about dividing into three groups.
Yes.
This was the most mentally unstable section of the whole thing.
Those drives that can be satisfied with minimal effort was group one.
Yep.
Those that can be satisfied, but only at the cost of serious effort, which was group two. And those that cannot be adequately satisfied no matter how much effort one makes. So, I mean, I guess he's just kind of getting at more people are in group one and group three. Again, going back to industry making things easier, minimal effort.
Yeah, it's more about the effects of the technological
society. Well, 74 and 75.
That's basically what I got from his entire argument in this section. That, again, technology and industry has made things a lot easier for us, but we yearn and we need that group two kind of feeling, like that hard, serious sacrifice, like I really did and gave it my all to get that biological primitive satisfaction.
Did you, the midlife crisis, did that stick out to you guys? 74?
I'm not there, but 63 jumped out at me. And he talks about advertising and marketing techniques have been developed that make many people feel they need things that their grandparents never desired or even dreamed of. It requires serious effort to earn enough money to satisfy these artificial needs. Hence, they fall into group two, which group two is those that can be satisfied, but only at the cost of serious effort. He says that modern man must satisfy his need for the power process largely through the pursuit of the artificial needs created by the advertising and marketing industry and through surrogate activities, which jumped out at me as modern consumerism.
Yeah. See, 63 kind of came to me because when he says, so certain artificial needs have been created that to fall into group two, hence serve the need for the power process. Advertising and marketing techniques have been developed to make many people feel they need things that their grandparents never desired or even dreamed of.
But didn't our grandparents desire and dream of things their grandparents? I mean, we go back and we go back and we go back.
They did. I mean, we always aspire to be better than our parents.
And
our
technology's always evolving.
And our parents always aspire to be better than that. We turn out better than they did. That's just human nature. You want your offspring to be better than you.
Yeah.
But again, going back into the whole industrial technology thing, what I take from it is it's like, you know what? The advertisers and the marketers use this as a tool, as a weapon to control human behavior. Like, you know, whether it was that nice, fresh, new $45,000 house or $450,000 house.
Or a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, the brand new BMW Z4. You know, the
that
one that
the
your
best
grandparent.
Part at Nick at night watching those old commercials.
So it's just that really stood out to me. It says, what if I go on, let me see, I kind of lost my place. Requires serious effort to earn enough money to satisfy these artificial needs, hence they fall into group two. Modern man must satisfy his need for the power process largely through the pursuit of the artificial needs created by the advertising and marketing industry and through surrogate activities.
I find paragraph 66 interesting. He says, today people live more by virtue of what the system does for them or to them than by virtue of what they do for themselves. And what they do for themselves is done more and more along channels laid down by the system. Opportunities tend to be those that the system provides. The opportunities must be exploited in accord with rules and regulations and techniques prescribed by experts must be followed if there is to be a chance of success. I kind of read that and I was like, is that like that whole influencer expert culture that we're now living in? That is now laying down these different type of how to live your life because they're telling you the system's fucked. So here's a new way to generate a new life. That's what this whole influencer culture.
And that's where I jumped down to his midlife crisis.
Which paragraph is
74.
That?
74. We suggest that modern man's obsession with longevity and with maintaining physical vigor and sexual attractiveness to an advanced age is a symptom of unfulfillment resulting from deprivation with respect to the power process. I disagree. The longevity thing goes back to before the industrial technological society. I mean, the fountain of youth. That goes back 1,000 years.
Yeah.
You know, wanting to live forever, that predates all of that.
But now you can just pop a Cialis.
Yeah, and that's valid. I mean, that's a valid argument.
A Viagra.
And how much money we've poured into, you know, old men getting boners.
Well, don't forget about the old men being ripped now, because there's all that.
Oh, low T. Low T, dog.
Gene therapy.
You got low T?
The end of paragraph 75, he says, it is not the primitive man who has used his body daily for practical purposes who fears the deterioration of age, but the modern man who has never had a practical use for his body beyond walking from his car to his house.
Mm-hmm. And that goes back to, again, he uses the social activity of like going to the gym and getting healthy as that example, because modern man hasn't had to struggle and fight and defend himself against wild animals and with that argument.
But in spite of that, we've managed to abuse our bodies more through, for example, sport or going to the gym. I mean, we have these people running marathons, and then by the time they're 30, they have no cartilage left in their knees.
But that, I guess,
primitive man
I think,
didn't do that.
I think that's that primitive urge, that power process thing that he talks about.
Yeah, but I think,
the satisfaction thing is
that I think about this all the time when I go for my runs. Running is a very cathartic thing, and it is probably the most primitive thing humans can do for mm-hmm. exercise. And here's the big difference when you say about cartilage. Modern man, the system, how we've been manipulated, says run faster, run further.
Run on roads.
Yeah.
Primitive man ran on grass.
That might be the part three of his disruption of modern process, because part three is those that cannot be adequately satisfied no matter how much effort one makes. So that could fall back in the, you know, you're fucking pushing yourself to the point because...
I think that's one of those society has imposed this upon you to mm-hmm. run faster, run farther, run harder.
Well, yeah.
There's people around here that pass me on my runs, these hard guys, and they're like in their mid-50s and they're going. I'm thinking, dude, chill out. Chill out a little bit.
No, like when you go to the gym and you see those... I call them the twitchies. And that sounds really judgmental, but you know those people who are there, their fitness, and you know they're doing all the exercises that look hilarious.
But they probably fall under that category where, again, there's a certain expectation or a certain way that they feel they have, because it's like, well, you have to do it this way in order to achieve the ultimate physique or whatever,
and then whereas you have to wear the shirt that says
you are,
because society has imposed that
exactly
upon
because
them.
The system or society has put that upon them to say, hey, well, if you're going to do it, you have to do it this way if you're going to be the fittest, the strongest, the fastest. Whereas you are like, I just go for a run because I just want to go for a run, and I go at my own pace, and I'm totally satisfied with that. Some people don't have that. They're wired differently, and they feel like, oh, no, because I read online that you have to run like 1,000 miles an hour for 15 minutes before you have any real results,
bro. And I got to have the cell phone on my phone with the headphones going here, and then I have to
have two of my iWatches that process this. I have to have Imagine Dragons running.
Which is funny. When I go for runs on the big trail that runs through the state. I go through and I pass these young guys, and they all have the phones up there. And I pass the old generation of runners. They wear nothing.
Yeah, they just run.
They run. They just have a good pair of shoes. You know, some of them have their marathon shorts and stuff, but they're just running.
Yeah.
They have no technology, and I find that so fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Do you have headphones on, though?
Nothing.
Okay.
No headphones, no phone, no nothing. I run him because, again, running is very primitive and cathartic. It's me and my thoughts.
But it has been manipulated or attacked by advertising and marketing, because why is the younger generation running with the famous shorts from a famous runner, or the $200 shoes, or the iPad?
Because in my hand is a copy of Runner's World.
Exactly. Yeah. That, and all it is another way that this industrial technology, or just the way these fucked up assholes are, they just manipulate and control, and they siphon every bit of money they can.
When I was at my peak for the exercise bike, I had a playlist that I would...
Chad, I don't even want to talk to you. You talked about a stationary bike.
No, it's...
You're a leftist.
I listened to music that was a certain beats per minute because it kept me pedaling faster. Relaxing music slows you down.
When I get on the bike, then I listen to podcasts and music.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, it's a different thing to me. But there's something I thought about when we were talking.
When you run, you're outside.
Yeah, I think...
In nature.
Oh, geez.
But when you're on the bike, Jake, you're in a fortress of solitude. Need something to occupy.
I gotta be honest, I never thought of it like that.
Thank you, Angel Kaczynski.
You're starting to kind of understand a little bit. I think that's what he's really trying to get
at. And it is true, and I said that beforehand. I said, look at those studies that have been done where they show how the brain activates when people are standing outside in bare feet. My father-in-law talks about this all the time. He's obsessed with this about earthing and things like that. Mm-hmm. And you got to put your feet in the soil, and the bed sheets have to be grounded.
Because you get that biological urge fulfilled.
Yeah.
Because you're outside. Your senses are... You got the birds, you got the sky, you have the wind, have the heat,
if you have a choice, and supposedly at some point all humans are going to have to make a choice. I don't know if in our time, but I think things are accelerating. If you have a choice between modern technology as symbolized by the city or nature as symbolized by the country, what do you take?
That's a tough one. And he doesn't sort of touch on that?
A little bit.
He kind of touches on, like, it's going to be a rough unplug for a lot of people.
When he talks about the revolution.
But what he doesn't address, but what some of his critics and scholars have, is, you know, 300 million Americans can all build a cabin in Montana. The math doesn't work.
But that he does say that. He says, if we were to unplug... If we were to turn this all off and revolutionize the entire system by eradicating what we call the industrial complex or whatever, people will die. Many sacrifices will be made. Food won't be as abundant. The weak will die.
Chad doesn't like to hear that.
And you don't like to hear that.
No, I don't think it's practical. But I don't think people want to do it.
It's funny when I get to this point, because Angel always says real change will have to be real huge sacrifice that no one is willing to undertake.
But that's exactly it. The majority needs to be willing, and they're not.
Well, but there is enough out there, the lefties, who can use that as a powerful tool, Chad. Because if they tell you, oh, we can keep the big farm that makes the GMO food going to keep you alive, just vote for me.
How's that the left?
It's just the powers that be. I shouldn't say the left. I should say the powers that be. But
all right.
When big government or when big corporations say you need us to keep you sound, to keep you alive, a lot of people say, yeah, you do. I need that.
But and that's the left and the right. I mean,
yes,
the right
it is. And I was wrong. I was wrong to say.
That's why I made
I was
that
wrong
face.
To say the left. I was incorrect. I should just say.
People want the status quo. By and large, they do.
They do, but people also want to survive. And they're going to do what they have
Which
to do
is
to
the
live.
Status quo. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's tough. But like he says, and I totally agree, and I've said this, it will take tremendous sacrifice. You will lose loved ones, or people will die. You will see some really ugly shit. And he is not delusional about that. He mentions that. It's going to be ugly if it were to happen.
But what he doesn't point out, there are several varieties of strength, and there are people who will survive despite not always having the physical tools.
Well,
you know, there are people who are socially gifted, and they will manipulate a situation in a group, even if it is that small community. They'll survive.
Oh, the strong...
He doesn't. I don't think he addresses that, and I don't think he recognizes that because I don't think he sees social skills as a strength.
The strong will separate themselves. I think where you say the lack of empathy is, like, he's pretty much like, people are going to die. That's it. He doesn't care that they are. He doesn't care that there will be mass starvation.
But to me, empathy isn't just empathizing with people. It's being able to place yourself in those other shoes. And it's reading a social situation. He doesn't. I don't think he has that.
And even when he talks about his revolution, even he says part of that, the revolution will be ugly and we'll have to do certain things to get things moving. And there are going to be horrible repercussions, but we're not going to have to worry about that because we'll be long dead. Those will be for other generations. I mean, he says it verbatim.
Yeah.
We don't have to fucking deal with that, so it doesn't matter. We're just here for the here and now, for what happens in the next 50 to 100 years.
But the lack of empathy, it just blows me away. You know, I mean, so real revolution
we're jumping the hell off.
Of the kind he's talking
about. I was
going
to say, do you want to jump ahead? We are...
I want to go to paragraph 88 is my next one.
Motives of Scientists?
Yeah.
Oh, that's where we're jumping. Yeah, I was going to say, the next section in the manifesto is how some people adjust. We've kind of talked about that in various ways. He talks about advertising and marketing techniques. He talks about how people are susceptible and vulnerable and why they want to be part of large organizations for collectivism and security. He does repeat himself a lot in this. I did get a kick out of this next section, the motives of scientists. Angel was talking about this earlier today. I do not like science because science is bought and sold. This idea of scientists as being these independent people in white lab coats who work meticulously and driven by the need for science.
Yeah. And the betterment of humanity.
And the betterment of humanity is total bullshit, and he says it.
He does. But Chad, you were about...
Yep, I have 88.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Highlight it. It's a good one.
One of my favorite parts... He lampoons comparative linguistics as it's basically one of his isms.
But he must have been hanging out with Chomsky at the time.
It brought him down. How ironic is that? It served no good, but it stopped a serial killer. So it served some good, motherfucker. Why don't you write some books while you're in jail? Oh, wait.
So 88 scientists are all bullshit.
I think there are a lot of sellouts.
Yeah, and he does talk about this Dr. Edward Teller. He says, consider the case of Dr. Edward Teller, who had an obvious emotional involvement in promoting nuclear power plants. Did this involvement stem from his desire to benefit humanity? If so, then why didn't Dr. Teller get emotional about humanitarian causes? If he was such a humanitarian, then why did he help to develop the H-bomb? As with many other scientific achievements, it is very much open to question whether nuclear power plants actually do benefit humanity. And then he goes into talking about nuclear waste and all the other ill effects of nuclear power, which does kind of make sense. I mean, if he's such a humanitarian, is he really a humanitarian or is he a scientist with wanting to follow the power process of pushing his agenda?
Yeah, in 89, that's what he talks
about.
Yeah,
but in 89, there's a counterpoint there. You know, what he calls a goal. You know, solving a scientific problem, is that innately good or bad? You know, what if it's curing a disease? Is that bad? Well, according to him, it is because, that's weakening the gene stock of the
human
race.
But I think what he's talking about is that it doesn't benefit humanity. It only benefits that person selfishly,
exactly.
And it benefits the system,
exactly.
Which continues its control over people.
Because... he goes a little deeper into this because the curing the disease thing goes into hereditary conditions like diabetes, like he says. If they were to create that, then you're talking about gene modification and gene therapy and all that. Now he gets a little
he gets a little out there. He's like, that's weakening the human race. Really? I mean, is taking a Tylenol when you have a headache weakening the human race? According to him,
there's a real health movement that says do not do that because your body needs to learn.
Yeah,
the pain.
I can't.
So that is a primitive. That's going back to the primitive
human. But back in primitives, they had other ways to relieve pain.
Well, they took they hammered nails into their heads.
They chewed something equivalent to tobacco or cocaine. Well, it's plant-based. Or they drank alcohol.
It's plant-based. Oh, yeah,
poisoning yourself. That's healthy, too.
Yeah.
But
Chad will always
primitive.
Believe in science, so we can't argue.
I'm not defending I just... He lampoons science at every turn. I think it does some good and some bad.
I think that I will agree there are some things that in science, if the right scientists are doing it, but there are a lot of scientists out there that are just pushing their own agenda for their own
or just power, selling their souls well, for their power
he,
corporate America.
He says it right here in 91. Also, science and technology constitutes a power mass movement,
mm-hmm.
and many scientists gratify their need for power through identification with this mass movement.
Yep.
Thus, science marches on blindly without regard to the real welfare of the human race
yep.
or to any other standard, obedient only to the psychological needs of the scientist and of the government, of fiscals and corporate executives who provide the funds
for research. That exactly.
That is modern science.
Exactly. All they're doing is they're doing what the big corporation or the money men are telling them what to do. And they're getting their gratification, their satisfaction by coming up with these scientific achievements and pushing those scientific achievements.
But
on
I'm a millennial.
Else.
I love Bill Nye the Science Guy. And Neil deGrasse Tyson, Mike Tyson, whatever his name is. These are my heroes. They don't talk about scientism. They talk about science.
Oh, yeah. I bet they do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I object to about science?
Science.
No, what I object is all the drugs that save lives and cure illness and treat people are funded by government grants, but then they get fucking copyrighted and patented by pharmaceutical companies, and then you or I can't fucking afford them even though we fucking paid for them.
Are you raging against Martin Skirkle or whatever his name is, the pharma bro?
Yeah, but these
I've been raging against
that since
before he
had
a name.
These are the same big pharmaceutical companies that make the insulin and all those wonderful drugs that save people's lives that also make the Oxycontins and the codeines that people become dependent on that, again, change and manipulate human behavior.
Or the Zika virus that the U.S. Army came up with
and
licensed to a French company.
Going back to those other paragraphs.
We don't want to talk about
that, Jeff. Going back to those other paragraphs when we talked about crowding and people in cities. Again, peeps, there are some people who don't want those things, who get aggressive, who get angry. And what do? We pop them an antidepressant pill, or we give them a pill to riddle in for your kids so they can calm down. It's all bullshit, Chad. It's all bullshit. It's all bullshit.
No, there are pills that help people, and there are pills that
I'm
are
not
bullshit.
Disagreeing with that. But what I'm telling you is his argument is that that whole complex, industrial technology, science, creating of medicine, all those wonderful things that they do for certain people, also generates very negative causes. The codependency to those drugs, the need to give somebody an antidepressant because they have to live in a crowded city and they can't deal with the noise. That's what he's getting at.
The system only benefits the system.
Because instead of letting people be who they are and getting away from the system, no, the system will provide you with something to make you compliant with that system. And if it takes an antidepressant or some kind of drug, we will provide that for you. That's what I get.
I see psychiatric medication differently than that. It's not about the system. It's about allowing a person to live and to function, whether that's in society or not.
He calls it making them tolerant to a bad situation. He does talk about making them tolerant. All it's doing is manipulating their mind to make them tolerant to whether it's social pressures, Facebook. No one likes me on Facebook. Here, have an antidepressant. This will make you feel better. No one retweeted my tweet. Here's some medicine. It'll make you feel better.
See, that's bullshit. I'm talking about people who are actually dealing with real issues.
I'm not saying there aren't people that are dealing with real issues, but we are quick to pop a pill in someone's mouth when they have a problem. We don't sit there and talk them through it or say, you know what, it's all bullshit. We just go, here, AstraZeneca will help.
Because the system needs you to be subservient.
Exactly.
To the system.
Because that's how they gain the obedience. That's how they gain the control.
You know, I was going to bring that
all
up. He doesn't talk a lot about
He doesn't
power and profit,
yeah,
which we always talk about in this podcast. You know,
because I'm a socialist.
Life is predicated on power and profit.
Yes.
He never really talks about
his
profit.
Is more obedience.
No. Yeah,
his is more control.
He comes from a much more anarchist perspective.
Yes,
about
his is more of the domination of human beings.
And I think that's his upbringing. He never struggled financially. He had a family that could support his, you know, living in a cabin, or he could have gone back to work at Berkeley and been quite financially well off, as he intimated, you know, professors are. So I don't think he understood what money is to other people.
And that's the next, his next section is called The Nature of Freedom. I found a few different interesting
which he addresses better later on.
Yeah, yes. 94, I thought he kind of summed it up. Mm-hmm. Freedom means being in control, either as an individual or as a member of a small group, of the life and death issues of one's existence. Food, clothing, shelter, and defense against whatever threats there may be in one's environment. Freedom means having power. Not the power to control other people, Chad, but the power to control the circumstances of one's own life.
But later in paragraph 138, he literally says freedom means different things to different people. He contradicted
himself. Yeah, but what's his section? What's the name of that section? So he lays down a premise, and then he investigates it through that. If again, he does contradict
that section
himself.
Is simpler social problems have proved intractable.
If you go on from that, what you were reading, he says freedom means having power, not power control, but to control circumstances in one's own life. He goes on to say, one does not have freedom if anyone else has power over one, no matter how benevolent, tolerantly and permissively that power may be exercised. It is important not to confuse freedom with permissiveness.
I don't know. This whole section seemed...
It's not one of his better ones?
No, this is intellectual masturbation.
Yeah.
Again.
I mean, he does talk about freedom of the press and how that is also... the mass media are mostly under the control of large organizations that are integrated in the system, which is, I find, completely true. I mean, mass media, especially these days, is bought and sold by large corporations or the money. So his system is pretty much everything that exists today in modern society. What we always argue about, the bankers, the large corporations, the government, you know, academia. I mean, he kind of touches on a lot of...
But to him, it's also Jake's favorite buddy, the small business down the street, is a part of that system because he benefits from it. And the technology, and he's controlling and enslaving people, and he's making you a slave to mass marketing and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, he talks about that small is not always better, that it's ideal, but at the same time, it's impossible, because even as a small community, you are going to depend on the power grid, the sewer, you know, technology at that point.
Infrastructure.
Yeah.
The roads. Thing you lampoon me about, the roads.
My roads.
Yeah.
Oh, we know about,
but you're
roads
dependent on
state.
Them.
Yeah. I think the big part of him is that the system will do what the system does to benefit itself, and that a person cannot always fight the system. Mm-hmm. The only way you're going to fight the system, again, is through his pure revolution. Because people are so selfish, they just give themselves over to it all the time. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's easier.
And that's what he's saying. I mean, the scientists, rather than going, a nuclear power is energy, he's working off his own selfishness to attain his power goals.
Yeah.
I mean, in the long run, does he really look at the long-term effects of that? Probably not.
No, because he is getting the fulfillment of not only achieving the goal of making the nuclear power work in a nuclear power plant, but convincing others that what he is doing is right and is just and is for the benefit of society.
He says that in 119, the system does not and cannot exist to satisfy human needs. Instead, it is a human behavior that has to be modified to fit the needs of the system.
Correct.
It's always the system in this section. It's always trying to change you and take you. And I have section 115 highlighted. The system has to force people to behave in ways that are increasingly remote from the natural pattern of human behavior. For example, the system needs scientists, mathematicians, and engineers. It can't function without them. So heavy pressure is put on children to succeed. to excel in these fields. Wow, that's all you hear these days.
Yeah,
and STEM.
Yeah, and you talk about how children have more anxiety these days, and they're not really allowed to be children. It's what you're gonna, what are you gonna be when you grow up? At the age of like 4 or 5, like you're gonna be an engineer or you're gonna be a biologist or whatever. And he touches on that, like these kids are being pushed. These kids are being pushed into whatever the system needs them to be. We saw it with when you talked about Obama and that whole get into academia, go get a degree. That was the thing. You have to go get an education. That's what you have to do. You need to become a brainwashed SJW because that's what we're looking for right now. That's what the system needs in order to survive.
And the further you go into this...
I just want to go back to 115 and allow me to present the capitalist counterpoint. God, that hurts to say. Isn't some of that supply and demand? I mean, are we pushing them or are we just making it advantageous and lucrative?
He doesn't talk
but
about
is supply
he doesn't, but is that not this, what's
is
happening?
Is supply and demand a part of the system, though?
Yeah.
Supply and demand is just a part of the system. It's a system generated thing. That's it. That's an old like industrial. There's supply and demand. You know, the people have
but
a demand.
Is society pushing that, or are the parents saying, "Oh, you can make"?
I think the system is pushing that. He's saying
that
the system is pushing it. If they realize it's like, well, we want to make more scientific advances in space, then the next generation of kids is going to be told they need to be astronomers, astronauts, all that bullshit.
But the perfect example is, like I said, I highlighted that section as this is what we're talking about: getting women and boys and everyone into STEM. Because this system has eradicated everything else. So that's all we have now is science. We have to get kids into it. And I think that's why he starts to go into this about humans being genetically modified. In 123, he goes, if you think that big government interferes in your life too much now, just wait till the government starts regulating the genetic constitution of your children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, and it starts, it's incremental because I go back to antidepressants and all that other shit. Not saying that they're not a good thing, Chad, but when you start prescribing them, like they're Tic Tacs because of every little problem, you're, in a sense, you are beginning to genuinely change people's perspectives, whether you're manipulating their mind through drugs or through certain types of therapy or whatever. And he touches upon that.
Gentlemen, we start off with Mr. Ted Kaczynski's paragraph 125, which is called technology is a more powerful social force than the aspiration for freedom.
Oof.
Damn.
That's a powerful, powerful statement.
Wow. All I can think about there is iPhone junkies.
As we sat here playing with our phones for 3 hours
before
we
off
started
and on.
Recording.
Yeah.
We were talking in junk.
Yeah.
he starts it out with in paragraph 125, it is not possible to make a lasting compromise between technology and freedom because technology is by far the more powerful social force and continually encroaches on freedom through repeated compromise. We kind of see that going on right now with Big Brother Tech, Facebook, Google, Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, how many people do we know that said, I got a Twitter account or a Facebook account because everybody else has one. That's how I keep in touch with people.
Facebook is the big one for
I've known some staunch people who were like, I'm not doing that. That's bullshit. That's stupid. And now they do Facebook.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have a choice.
Yeah, there are people who do make that, like, oh, I couldn't contact you because you're not on Facebook. I feel like I have a cousin or two like that, and I'm like,
yeah,
I don't care.
You do get kind of shamed for not having Facebook sometimes. Yeah. I know I went through it. I still don't have a Facebook.
Yeah, I don't either. Well, none of us do.
No, I do.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Of course you do.
Actually, sadly
he's
got
to keep up on all the Antifa movement.
Antifa!
No, I signed up to get, like, bonus points on a game, an iPhone game or something.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, I play games that tell you that, and I don't know.
Well, I
know.
Like, three of my friends caught my Facebook in the first, like, 5 minutes.
That sounds like
I
a venereal disease.
They caught my Facebook. Yeah. I was stuck.
Chad's Facebook sends out viruses to people.
Dude, this on Headline News, Facebook herpes is sweeping the nation.
Is Headline News still around?
I think they do just like Nancy, whatever the fuck.
Nancy
oh my
Drew.
God.
The fuck is that woman's name?
Nancy Grace.
Yes! Oh God, she's awful. People are being raped! Yeah, great. Thanks. Appreciate that insight.
Wow, I can't believe she's still
I think she
around.
Is. She is still around.
Paragraph 127 is an excellent example of what he's trying to sum up. He says, a technological advance that appears not to threaten freedom often turns out to threaten it very seriously later on.
Because that's how it is. It's like, hey, all right, look, these new iPhones, they have facial recognition, mm-hmm. and that's how you log in and all that shit. Yeah, because that shit's not being logged on some computer somewhere.
One down at 128. To summarize what we always say, it's incremental. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what he's suggesting. Each little individual technological change doesn't look like a big deal. But then you add them all together, and it's this gradual erosion of the way he would see it, freedom. And he's talked about it before, it becomes essential. You have to have this. You know, you have to have a car. You have to have a cell phone.
Yeah, he says that up in paragraph 127. And I had his note highlight it because pretty much sums it up. Note this important point that we have just illustrated with the case of motorized transport. And he talks about how people needed cars because they needed to get to the city, blah, blah, blah. When a new item of technology is introduced as an option that an individual can accept or not as he chooses, it does not necessarily remain optional in many cases. The new technology changes society in such a way that people eventually find themselves forced to use it.
Mm-hmm. The internet, yeah.
Smartphones are becoming like
smartphones,
that.
Smartphones, yeah. And he kind of says something like that in 129 when he says, another reason why technology is such a powerful mm-hmm. social force is that within the context of a given society, technological process marches in only one direction. It can never be reversed. Once a technical innovation has been introduced, people usually become dependent on it. And that was huge with me because, again, smartphones, we go, who fucking lives without a smartphone these days? You know, they become been introduced. People usually become dependent on it so that they can never again do without unless it is replaced by some still more advanced innovation. And you see it now. iPhone 4, iPhone 5, iPhone X.
Or imagine being without a car in our area.
Mm-hmm.
Like you'd be limited to, you know, your name, what's within walking distance for you.
Well, he talks about that before. The automobile was his classic example of how technology kind of shows itself as, hey, this is going to really help you out, to now you don't have a choice. And everything else that comes along with it. The car was the perfect example.
You have less control.
Less control.
You're giving up that autonomy.
Less control through a freedom that was given to you, quote unquote, with this new technology, because that was the whole point of the automobile. Free to roam wherever you want. And now the car is not really like that, even though you watch TV and these commercials are all about, you can go anywhere you want with your Jeep Cherokee out in the wilderness. No, you can't. I mean, come on, let's be honest here. How many people that buy a Jeep Cherokee go out to fucking Yellowstone?
Even a more ridiculous one is that you're going to buy a $120,000 Land Rover.
Yeah.
And drive it through the desert.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
You're going to do what the guys on, you know, the Grand Tour have done. Yeah. Nobody.
And the domestics are like that. They push the Cherokee's like a Jeep. It's for the rough and tumble guy. But we have leather seats and wood trim. It's like, get the fuck out of here. Yeah, it's all bullshit.
And then he says in 130... those who want to protect freedom are overwhelmed by the sheer number of new attacks and the rapidity with which they develop. Hence, they become apathetic and no longer exist. Because
you don't have a Facebook, you don't have a smartphone, mm-hmm. you don't have this. Yeah, and some people can only take so much before they just kind of like, all right, I'll get it. Yeah, I mean, it has its advantages and its disadvantages, but
I think it's a choice for each person. I think you can choose to abstain. You guys are still choosing to not have a Facebook. It doesn't seem to be, you know, causing you suffering and pain.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things in here that, as we go deeper, that reminded me of what I see happening with the RFID chips. That right now they're being marketed. Wave your hand over the screen at work at the cafeteria, and boom, it's all taken care of, and opening a door.
It starts with the iWatch, with the whole you can pay at the register thing.
Yeah.
That's kind of, to me, that's kind of the beginning of, well, I mean, if you're willing to wear a watch that can just be swiped, that knows who you are and your bank account and everything,
like you said. What?
And I'm not a biblical guy, but I had a grandfather a long time ago who always talked about this. But they call it in the Bible, what, the mark of the beast is how I remember him putting it. Chad, you're the biblical scholar.
You mean about tattoos?
Well, I don't know if that's what it's referring to, but my grandfather always talked about the chips. And yeah,
it's funny, I've gone to different varieties of church. I've gone to pretty liberal ones, pretty evangelical ones, very conservative ones. And the tattoo thing is an interesting split, because there's that younger generation that the church is trying to embrace and get to grow. And a lot of them have tattoos and piercings. But there's the kind of the counter against that. It's some of the older people are like, oh, tattoos. And even some of the younger people who are more Puritan, you know, they're so even in churches, even in traditional churches, there's not agreement there. So then how are you going to get society to agree about technology if you have people with a common set of assumptions, you know, like a biblical upbringing, and they can't even agree?
Again, like I've said many times on this podcast, the millennials are engineered to accept any and all of this. I mean, they're the ones whose arms are covered in tattoos. They're the ones that I see getting the implants when they show these. They're always these bearded, tattooed guys. These, as he talks about, the technician type, mm-hmm. who are willingly sitting there and getting these implants because they love technology. That's what he talks about in 133, you know, technology advances are permanent within a civilization. You can't go back.
Yeah.
I think that's a big stumbling block I have with the whole thing, though. And maybe I should save this till the end, but since you bring it up, you know, there's that trade-off. Would we want to go back to being hunter-gatherers? I don't. I like being able to go to the liquor store and get a bottle of Captain Morgan. I like being able to go to the grocery store.
Wouldn't it be more gratifying if you made your own moonshine in your backyard there?
Isn't that sort of, I mean, we lampooned it in an episode, but isn't that what the whole artisanal farm-the-table type of movement is?
Yeah, but they're phonies.
They are.
There's that phony sect, but there's the actual, you know, like, I mean, there were people who had farms and there were people who made certain things and you kind of bartered and traded
goods and services. Well, there are people who care and are better at things. And they make, you know, our Captain Morgan.
Did you just say that there's people better at things?
Yeah. Aren't they all supposed to be on an even playing field, Chad? I mean, I'm really confused.
Take your soul.
Aren't the people who are better at things supposed to be suppressed so that the people who aren't better at things can feel better about themselves and get those?
Only if you're straw man in my political views. But you know.
Oh, man.
That was too good.
One thing he doesn't address, though, I mean, he talks about the revolution and he talks about how, you know, whatever, we can throw off the overlords in whatever form they take. He doesn't talk about preservation of freedom. He kind of hints at it a few times, but I'm going to go back to the revolution.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's more important to kickstart the revolution.
Of freedom needs watering by the blood of patriots. You know, how do you keep your freedom? And you and I have had this debate 100 times about economics. You know, once you get a system in place, socialism, capitalism, whatever, they all tend to collapse under their own weight, because the flaws are exacerbated and exacerbated and exacerbated, and it reaches this breaking point where the system just collapses, and then we get a new system.
He talks about that too.
The flaws in that inevitably come out, and people suffer when that happens.
Yeah,
he talks about that. You might get a revolution, or rather, the system collapsing could open up even more dangerous avenues.
He kind of implies that ultimately, the system will collapse.
Yes.
Like, it will. Technology and all this shit is going to fail at some point. And that's when he thinks that
progress
people need
past
to
what your system can handle.
Well, yeah.
But I think if it collapses,
but then there's another system.
Does he say it's, I don't think he says it's purposely made to collapse, but I think if it collapses, in the right, correct order for the technicians and the rulers, this is how technology will then get you.
Yeah, the way we would see it is the elites always have contingency plans.
Yeah.
And they're ready for it.
Yeah.
It collapses, and then, okay, plan B goes into effect. Make sure plan C, D, and E are updated.
Yeah, and I don't think we've gotten to that part yet, but man, yeah, he talks about that. The next section is revolution is easier than reform, Chad.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chad.
I disagree.
I've said this many times.
I have a section in 141. highlighted, a revolutionary movement offers to solve all problems at one stroke and create a whole new world. It provides the kind of ideal for which people will take great risks and make great sacrifices. But it's he says at the end of 142, it may be that in such cases, only a minority of the population is really committed to the revolution, but this minority is sufficiently large and active so that it becomes the dominant force in society.
Well, just like everything is incremental, revolution is incremental. You start small time, and then you have to kind of start building it up from there.
He does talk about how the system will fail, and I think he does talk about that is an opportunity for this minority.
That would be the time to kind of attack, and that's what he says. When it starts to break down, that's when the revolutionaries would come in and just kind of start to break it down from the inside. But you have to wait till it's weakened.
Is that revolution?
He doesn't...
That's cannibalism.
I don't know.
It might be opportunism.
Yeah.
He's just saying seize the opportunity when you can. But he doesn't talk about overthrowing it all at once. I mean, he kind of says that you may not be able to do that. You can get in there and you can start to kind of break it down.
I mean, people have families that they have to take care of or be responsible for. People have loved ones that they care about. None of that shows in these paragraphs.
Well, you have to sacrifice yourself.
Yeah.
So. Or throw your family to the wolves. Yeah.
Hey, well, if it's in the best interest of taking the system down, I'll let them all die. And I think that's what he's kind of trying to tell everybody.
So says the guy just came back from the Illuminati meeting.
Exactly. But that's maybe what he's trying to tell you. It's like you're going to have to give up a lot of shit if you want to take it down.
So yeah, he says that.
That's why he says reform isn't even an option, because reform is too painful. It's too grueling.
But that's not what he said. He said revolution's easier.
Of course it's easier. Yeah. It's easier to wipe it all out and start all over again. Cool. If you level it, then it's gone.
Because all you do, and I have this argument with Chad constantly, because all you do when you say you want reform is that you're just massaging the system. You're not really making any deep, incisive changes. You're just kind of going, oh, well, I'll do a little cosmetics over here.
But I think it's easy for him to say that because he was so far outside of the system.
I don't know, but revolution is kind of like that. Revolutionaries come through and they wipe out whatever it is that they're...
Revolutionaries are usually
I think
the most oppressed.
I think you see him as a recluse, and instead he was part of the system. He was in
but
the
But now
Ivies.
He wrote this.
I don't think it matters. I think, again, I'm going through this perspective of these people who are elevated at such a young age, and the system itself selects them. So when you have this type of mind, somebody in the system is always looking at. It's like talent agencies for models. There's always some guy there from the Ford agency at airports looking for young, beautiful girls to select them and move them up. It's the same thing with intellectuals.
But in his head, he was always outside the system.
But that, again, that's correct. But most people sell their soul to the system. And again, this manifesto is he's talking to people who don't sell their souls. Because if you're in the system, I mean, if you're Harvard bred generationally, the system works for you. I mean, it's the whole point of I'm going to drain the swamp.
But don't you think that might be who he's writing to? I mean, he was a mathematical genius. So that's
but
his leaning.
But it's like
those
you said, he's an outsider.
But they're all outsiders to an extent.
Not outsiders like us.
On his level, they are. Because
it's all relative.
From what I read, you know, at his level of mathematical genius, it was a half dozen to a dozen people were on his level.
But people in...
You can be in the system, but you're an outside group.
You can. I mean, you can be a Harvard Ivy League grad, still have all that generational money, and be a bartender in Boston. It's quite possible. But once you are part of that, you're always part of it. Like, it's your blood. Once you're a Brahmin, you're always a Brahmin. I mean, you're not going to be outside of that. I mean, it's enclosed. I mean, these people on this planet have been incestuously reproducing forever in one way or another to keep power. And he was born outside of the system, but the system will always try to bring you in if it thinks it can exploit
you.
Well,
it can integrate you into the system.
Yeah.
And maybe he kind of broke off and detached from that.
Yes.
And now he's trying to tell people, I was in there. I saw that kind of shit. this is what you need to watch out for, because this is how they're going to fuck you.
Exactly. That's exactly what I think.
Yeah,
this
and
is.
He comes, I mean, he does come off, you know, with no empathy and all that other bullshit because he was fucked in the head. But his point is that they're trying to fuck you. I mean, that's all I get from this whole thing.
The elites
like,
are trying to fuck
you. The elites are trying
you.
To fuck
technicians.
You.
The technicians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But isn't there an element of he's the elite too? So can we trust him?
I think maybe he was, and he realized, like, this is all bullshit.
I think he's very cynical, and he understands that, as we just read about, it's going to take a minority to pull this off, and because a majority is just stupid, simple, obedient tools.
Yeah.
Company men.
But that's where I think he doesn't understand revolutions or human psychology. The people who lead a revolution have his kind of mindset.
Yeah.
But they're not the only ones who make up a revolution.
No.
On some level, you need to get, you know, in his case, the people he looks down on, you need to get them on board.
Yeah, but he also might see the people who agree to this as stupid foot soldiers. I mean, that's what people who, I mean, what did Robespierre do? I mean, look at all the idiots he threw out there to go do his bidding. He just sat back and drank red wine as the guillotine was chop, chop, chopping away and took all credit. And now we have busts about him. And real revolutionaries really don't do anything. They kind of sit back and let everyone else.
They're the idea men.
Yeah.
The think tank.
The problem with having this discussion is each revolution's unique. And it requires its own circumstances, and it's an aberration.
I agree.
I mean, there no two revolutions are the same.
What about that Bolshevik revolution you enjoy so much? Anyways.
There's a lot of bloodshed there that we don't talk about today.
No.
Never forget.
You got to go read that yourself.
We've whitewashed that quite a bit.
Yeah, that, don't use that whitewash thing. Next thing you know, you're going to be wearing white polos and fucking Sieg Heiling all over the place.
Next section is control of human behavior.
That sounds like a class I took.
As he says at the very beginning, since the beginning of civilization, organized societies have had to put pressures on human beings of the sake of the functioning of the social organism. Yes. To keep this whole thing going, we have to use all sorts of tactics on you to keep this machine clunking, smoking, churning away.
See, what do you take from that?
You're just a useful idiot.
See, I take it, because I'm going to go zero to Lenin here, you know, that exploiting of the underclass and that, you know, making people, subsuming them into the system.
The serfs.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it, and chewing people up and spitting them out.
Well, here we go. Well, 145. Imagine a society that subjects people to conditions that make them terribly unhappy, then gives them drugs to take away their unhappiness. Mm-hmm. Science fiction? It's already happening to some extent in our society.
This was in 95 he was saying this. And that's what they do these days.
Yeah, and I have on my border just says Big Pharma.
Yeah. And that sums up Big Pharma in a nutshell.
Oh, it goes beyond that.
You have issues, take a pill. You can't stand this, take a pill. That's all it is. It's too noisy in the city. Here, have an antidepressant or a relaxant. This will help you sleep.
Or put your headphones in and listen to a great uplifting podcast like 3 Empty Pints.
It comes in and it comes in multiple forms. It could be drugs, it could be, you know, get the new Bose noise canceling headphones. Yeah. It's just,
are you sad or are you defeated? Because you're working a dead-end job and there's no chance for advancement. You don't have the time or the opportunity to get out of it. And then, you know, drugs are one avenue, but like you said, it's distractions. It's, drink our beer and
consumerism.
Attractive women will sleep with you.
Consumerism. I mean, Bill Hicks, Carlin, everybody has
and it's easy
gone
to,
after
it's
it.
Easy to give into too.
Yeah.
It is because it's convenient, it's there, and it helps you relieve stress.
Your beer is good.
Your life sucks. Go into debt, buy a new car, you'll feel better.
Buy a new car,
yourself.
Buy a new house, go get drunk. You know, anything.
Have an affair. Jump online and
watch Will and Grace.
What
Whatever.
Was that website? Ashley Madison.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think of. Yep.
Ashley Madison. Yep. Good Lord almighty.
And remember, guys. Porn makes you cheat on your wife, as we discussed.
Yeah, it does, and makes me want to rape every woman I see.
Yes, thank you, Reverend.
Reverend Chad.
Thank you, Father Drucker.
Then he goes into the other things from 146. He talks about entertainment provides modern man with an essential means of escape. I like this also in 147. Many primitive peoples, when they don't have work to do, are quite content to sit for hours at a time doing nothing at all because they are at peace with themselves and their world. But most modern people must be constantly occupied or entertained. Otherwise, they get quote-unquote bored, i.e. they get fidgety, uneasy, irritable, anxious, as we talked about in another episode.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff in that 147. Like at the beginning when he talks about the hidden cameras and computers are using us to collect vast amounts of data on people. Like I was like, whew, man.
Whew. Well, and there's one he kind of addressed earlier, freedom. You know, where does... And now I'm going to sound like a libertarian. Somebody shoot me. But where does my freedom end and yours begin? You know, he talks about hidden cameras in stores. Isn't the store free, the owner of the store free to put up cameras to secure his investment, his work?
You said it before. Freedom means different things to different people. So, but it, true freedom, I don't even know if we even know what true freedom is anymore.
People are socially engineered not to really understand what true freedom is. You know, some people go like some 1:30 in the morning infomercial that talks about have your financial freedom.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have all the Porsches and the blondes surrounding you. But that's a consumerist type of freedom, too. You're fed that. That's propaganda.
That kind of freedom has become marketed for.
And now, as we see with the millennials, it's this entrepreneurial spirit. That's your new freedom. It's
when
wrapped
I hear
up
freedom
this...
at this point, I just associate it with capitalism and greed.
Yeah, but I
and
think
I know
it's,
that's not
I
what
think,
it should be.
I think it's moving away from that from with this millennial generation because they know that we know that you can't have that 9-to-5 work for IBM anymore. That shit's gone. So now you have to go out there and find your own freedom. But again, it's wrapped in this new agey delusional happiness, and I rail against.
But isn't that bullshit too? I mean,
it's all bullshit. Curators, influencers, thought leaders.
Yeah, their version of freedom, the gig economy. You're free to work for Uber.
But you're
that's free not free. You're working for the man.
You're working for six different jobs. Yeah. That's what the gig
that's
economy is.
That's not freedom.
Is.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're pursuing your passions.
Yeah, you're doing what you want to do as long as it's within the confines of the system. That's all it is.
DJing Saturday nights.
That's all it is. As long as it doesn't obstruct with what they're trying to do, which is control you or keep you in your own little bubble.
Everything's been curated for you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what is freedom?
I don't think humans know freedom.
I honestly,
unless you go back to his primitiveness.
Yeah, you have to. You have to wipe. That's what he talks about with revolution. It needs to be leveled off. Like it just needs to be destroyed, which will never happen.
Leveled off.
Well, you know what I mean. Like they need to level it. They need to just destroy it, flatten it. Just like it's
so everyone's on the same level.
No, it just needs to be destroyed. Like technology needs to go away. Period.
Well, that's what.
And it won't happen.
I say once you get rid of all these institutions that comprise the system, if you're able to destroy all of those, if you're even able to get to that, then maybe humans can take that sigh of relief and go, okay, what's this all about? Do I get back nature? Do I walk around in my backyard barefoot? Do I look at the stars again? Do I daydream about the clouds?
But he said also that will be extremely ugly because without all that extra technology, the medicines and all that other shit that keeps people alive, and these people are going to start fucking dropping like flies.
Well,
it will be survival of the fittest, but
yeah,